American Idol, so I think we can roll. Okay, thank you, everybody. Just wanted to call the meeting to order. And before we review the meeting minutes and get going with the formal meeting, I wanted to do things. First, this is the last meeting for Susanna and Bill in their respective positions as members of the council. And I wanted to introduce a resolution for each of them, acknowledging the outstanding work they've done on the council. And obviously, just by being here, their commitment to the university speaks for itself. In your packets, you should have each received a copy of that resolution. They're somewhat similar, and I'm just going to read them. First for you, Susanna. Thank you. Whereas Susanna Fessler, Professor Susanna Fessler, served as the faculty representative to the University Council for the 2010-2011 academic year, and whereas in that position she effectively represented the instructional faculty and professional staff of the University at Albany, thus facilitating the work of the Council meeting its statutory responsibilities under Section 356 of the New York Education Law, and whereas she offered important insight and counsel to the University Council on a broad range of issues brought before the body for consideration and action, and whereas she undertook this assignment in a professional and responsible manner, therefore be it resolved that in recognition of her services as a faculty representative, the Council expresses its gratitude for her active participation and leadership, especially during a period of institutional and statewide budgetary reductions, and therefore be it further resolved that the University Council extends its good wishes to her as she assumes her duties as the chair of the University Senate for 2011-2012. And I just want to say thank you on behalf of all of us, and you know, acknowledge everything you've done, and hopefully, if I could get a motion to pass the resolution.
So moved. Second.
Move.
Great. Wonderful. Bill, we say glowing things about you, too. It's a little bit similar. I'm going to read the first part, two paragraphs. The rest follows similar to the other. Whereas Bill McCann, Jr., Esquire, served as the alumni representative to the University Council for the 2010-2011 academic year, and whereas in that position he effectively represented 150,000 alumni of the University of Albany, thus facilitating the work of the Council and meeting its statutory responsibilities under Section 356 of the New York Education Law. And it follows like Susanna's, and once again, thank you for everything you've done. I think you've really opened our eyes even further about the great work that the Alumni Association does and really brought these two bodies closer together. And I know, Kay, we're going to get to you as part of this meeting, who is succeeding for Bill. But again, thank you to everybody. And if I could get a motion in furtherance of Bill's resolution.
So moved. So moved.
Second.
Everybody in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That vote was also for Suzanne, since we didn't take a vote for her.
We did.
We got motions, but we never got a vote.
That's okay. We didn't get a vote?
That's right.
No. So George is on the governance committee, too.
Dan, shouldn't we do the Sorrel? You should have noticed that.
And there is also a resolution for Stephen Guerrieri as well, the student member. And I would ask if we could get a motion. Stephen's not here, so I think we can truncate that a little. A motion to move this resolution. Everybody in favor?
John moves.
All right. So passed. Thank you. You want to introduce Kay or Bill?
I think Bill wants to.
Bill, you want to introduce our new member?
Yes. Cannon Casey Holt Taylor. And she's done a tremendous job at the Alumni Association as vice president. She head up our strategic planning initiative and our steering committee, and is running full speed into her term as president, which she'll be president for 2 years. And she was President Philip's big brother or big sister.
Sister.
He always says that, makes it a point back when they had.
Well, see, I'm now calling her my little sister because she's a little disturbed by the fact that she's a year older than me.
But Kay has had a long experience at the university and worked for the central administration for many years, and so she brings a diverse background in her academic background and also her experiences here at the university in a number of positions. So she is going to do an awesome job, and we're excited to have her as our incoming president.
Thank you, Bill.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Welcome. Great to have you. We have a very full agenda today. I think just as a sort of motion of protocol here, did anybody have any comments on the minutes from the last meeting? And if not, can I get a motion to pass the minutes?
So
John Fallon?
I motion.
So
I move.
I was nervous.
I second that motion.
We've got to get John on the minutes, one of these things.
Everyone in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion passes.
I need more Google hits.
Is Pat on the phone?
I don't know, is she?
Can you?
Hey,
Pat, are you on the phone?
Not yet. Okay, she hasn't joined us yet.
I
think, you know, before we turn to the report from George, I mean, everybody is focused on the legislation and sort of as it evolves over time. And I know we're going to hear from George as to what that is, what we think it is, and what it might become. And as a body, I think we've, you know, exchanged some emails and correspondence. And, you know, I know we've done our best to stay on top of that, George, and I think it's been first and foremost in our minds, obviously, our ability to, you know, not only compete financially, but compete with our peer institutions and have the opportunity to continue the vision that you have and others have for this institution. So rather than sucking up a lot of time with my views on it, I thought we'd start with your comments, and I think we'll get into it a little bit.
I'll try and go quickly because I do have a lengthy report. But I will start out by congratulating Dr. James Jackson, who has been appointed to the New York State Board of Regents. And so we have even more influence.
More responsibility.
Jim is retired, but he's a failed retiree like I am. So. All of you have been reading about UB 2020 and the machinations that have gone on about possibly passing individual legislation for the University of Buffalo and then the possibility of adding Stony Brook and having University at Albany and Binghamton be relegated to a second tier or phase two type of process, which was unacceptable, frankly, from my perspective. And we've been very vocal. We had a particularly good week in that we were able to, well, we were able, we, the local chambers of commerce, the local economic development entity invited a group of, it turned out to be 130 business people to a meeting. It was a very impressive turnout, very strong support for the university. In turn, we've finally gotten a series of very, very good pieces in the newspaper. We, interestingly enough, have also gotten access to the right people downtown. We've spent time with all the leadership in the legislature. We've spent time with the governor's, the governor's top guy. We met individually with the lieutenant governor. We've had numerous opportunities to explain why it is so important that the University at Albany be included in any proposal. And to be really honest with you, if you're talking about game changers, we're the only game changer in town. You know, we've succeeded where others have failed, and we certainly should not be punished for our past success. Anyway, the governor announced a program funded by the governor to the tune of $80 million and SUNY for $60 million. The money from SUNY came from their emergency capital fund, so they made sure that we knew that, so it wasn't as though they were hoarding the $60 million. It came out of emergency funds. $140 million that the four university centers will have the opportunity to compete for. The proposals, we've already submitted a plan, and frankly, if you were to just imagine the fact that we had a whole cadre of people that literally worked 18 to 24 hours a day for 5 days to get this together. I know I'm going to have to throw my couch out because Vince slept there 3 nights. I won't sit on it. No. but it was a yeoman's effort to get this plan out. It's a very good plan. There will be a distribution of the plan in its next iteration, so that you'll all get to see it. In the meantime, we're in the mix. We are now called upon to come up with another proposal. That proposal is one that will be reviewed by ESDC, SUNY, and the governor's office to determine whether or not we qualify for that $35 million in capital funding.
So what was the first proposal for them?
The first proposal was a proposal that said we were prepared. It's kind of an interesting. It's kind of an interesting dynamic. When we first started meeting with the leadership, we were told that, well, the reason that Buffalo and Stony Brook might go first is because they're ready to go. And we said, well, wait a minute, we're ready to go. And frankly, our proposal, I believe, is the best of the four in terms of being ready to go. We did a very good job because we do have plans that have been on the table for a long time. So it's not like we had to start from scratch. This proposal is going to be consistent with the parameters that were established for this particular $35 million grant competition. We need to detail the areas of academic focus that we're that's consistent with our mission that we're going to be looking at. We're going to have to tie in a significant economic development component to the proposal. We're going to have to show examples of partnerships, public-private partnerships, that can be facilitated as a result of the proposal. We need to show a substantial amount of local support, which we're in the process of getting. We need to show how we are going to leverage that $35 million into a far bigger program of economic development and construction, and I'll get back to that point in a minute. And we need to detail our expansion plans that will result from this aggregated program. The expansion plans are both capital and people hiring with a commensurate economic impact. In any event, the interesting part of this whole thing is that none of this is achievable. And to be honest with you, if we get no tuition relief, if we don't get, and frankly, tuition relief, which is in excess of what they call rational tuition. Rational tuition, the amount that we're talking about for that, gets us to the point where we can barely, not quite, but barely balance our budget. That money has to be used for operating purposes. There is no way I can use that. I cannot monetize that revenue for anything to do with capital. That has to be used for people. That has to be used for operating monies. So if we get rational and nothing else, this is a non-starter for us because we just can't afford it. If we get Rational Plus, which is this program that has been identified as a potential, which is rational tuition plus an incremental amount that would apply to the university centers, to use primarily to drive economic development, we can then monetize the cash flow. Part of the plan is an increase in enrollment for the university over a period of time. That increase over a 10-year period is about 5,000, and a difficult task considering that the demographics of the state of New York are just the opposite. There will be a 30% decline in high school graduations by the end of the decade. There will be, so the actual catchment area is different. We're going to have to change our whole emphasis. We're going to have to look at far more out-of-state students, far more international students, far more non-traditional students, look at the prospects of distance learning and a number of other new paradigms as to how to accommodate, you know, the what will be the new university going forward. All of that is, you know, we're mindful of that, and we understand that that's something that has to be done. Regardless of what's going on here, we have to do that. The argument as to who's at the table, those of you who are local have been reading this stuff that, you know, that Buffalo's at the table and maybe Stony Brook's at the table and University of Albany and Buffalo are not at the table. Well, whatever table we're talking about, I guess we're at. So it's a party, incidentally, that nobody got any invitations to. I called Deb Glick, and because one of the newspaper articles, she said that it said she was invited to this meeting, and I said, "What's going on?" And she said, "Well, I read in the newspaper I was invited to the meeting, but I don't know about any meeting." So, but in any event, we're at the table, whatever that might mean. We think right now that the conversation is strictly for four centers. We're mindful of the fact that there. That Buffalo has had a lot of traction in the past and that there is a bill that's already been passed by the Senate, which is solo for Buffalo. We can't forget the fact that that's out there and it's been passed, so we have to be careful there. The community has stepped up. The Times Union has stepped up. They have done a fabulous job in terms of supporting the university. We intend to continue the push for community and media support. We are frankly optimistic that that our approach has been the best approach. I think the Vince and I got down to the Lieutenant Governor's office about an hour after our media with the business community, and he was aware that the meeting had happened, which is good news. They means that that it had an impact, that they that the news got down there. We have submitted two featured projects for this proposal. The featured projects are a biomedical informatics biomedical information innovation research plaza. It's a $100 million project. It builds on our strengths in biomedical sciences and information technology. It will house pretty much the a new biomedical operation and our current College of Computing and Information, and allow for some of the expansion there. We are coupling that with private sector opportunities that we think are very feasible for us in terms of partnerships. We're hoping that that will attract and spur additional development, and it will be a catalyst for economic growth that we can quantify for our initial submission. This is just one of the many projects that are attached to this thing. The other thing is the incidentally, in this particular instance, much of this has been on the drawing board. So this is not something that we've had to sort of make up on the way. The other project
that be
is
on this campus or East Greenberg?
Actually, there's we're hoping that it'd be on the Harriman campus.
That campus.
So and actually, so but you'll be interested. It's a lot of it may be predicated around Building One, your old digs, civil service.
Still vacant, yes.
Yeah,
vacant.
It's so that's also, and incidentally, with a Building One approach, the price tag goes down. So that's also a possibility. The other is Alumni Quad Midtown Rehabilitation Initiative, around $57 million, and that is also a plan that was in the works. The beauty of that plan is that it can leverage the $35 million, and since it has a lot to do with the its dormitories, we can use different types of fund and different types of debt to accommodate that. So that's actually a very feasible project. What that would do is rehabilitate that entire facility, expand it to add for mixed-use retail and other amenities that we could partner with the private sector on, that would end up creating some additional growth, do a lot to improve the neighborhood that's down there, because you know, we certainly need to improve our relationships with that neighborhood. But that's also a project that has been worked on for some time, and that's in the works. We need to continue the pressure. We need to continue to step up, and you will see probably another flurry of media and another flurry of business support activities, because we've been informed pretty much that that the governor has done his thing, and now it's up to us to do our thing to get the legislature to be supportive. Those of you who are familiar with the legislature recognize that this is anathema to the assembly and has been for some time. So we need to convince them that this is critically important.
So this whole process is still all tied to legislative.
It's tied to, okay. As far as I'm concerned, it's tied to legislation, because absent tuition dollars,
yeah, you
can't do anything. The $35 million.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the money.
$35 million is nice to have, but I will tell you that, and I could spend it, and I could build something.
Right. The real change is we need to legislate.
Well, I couldn't clean it. I couldn't heat it. Yeah. I couldn't cool it.
Adding to your problem.
You know, I couldn't staff it. Right. I couldn't occupy it. But I could build it. You know, so I mean, it's ridiculous. Right. Shut up. I got to be good here. Anyway, budget-wise, we continue to have our difficulties. The budget, as enacted, as you know, called for an additional $132.5 million cut to SUNY. Our share of the cut, which we have yet to be assigned, but based on the past allocations It'll be between $10.5 and $11 million. We anticipated a cut. We didn't anticipate as big a cut, and in our budgeting, we actually anticipated a tuition increase. It's yet to come, so I can't tell you what the full impact is of the budget cuts until I understand whether on the revenue side, whether I'm going to get additional tuition dollars. There is a consensus that we will be able to get an increase in our out-of-state tuition and in our graduate tuition, which is also a mixed bag because the last time we had a 70% increase in out-of-state tuition, we had about a 30% decline in out-of-state students. So it's a matter of supply and demand. It is not that much of a flexible market where you can just charge anything you want. I know we think it should be able to because it's a wonderful university, but if you're living in Ohio, you have choices and you could go elsewhere. The other thing, as far as graduate students, frankly, our doctoral students are a liability in the sense that most of the tuition dollars are paid by us. So it's not exactly a thing. So we probably would have to look at increasing our master's cohort substantially to actually make a meaningful difference by having that graduate tuition go up. But again, we don't know. We don't know whether the tuition increase will occur. We don't know whether it will be rational, whether it will be rational plus, whether rational will be further limited. We're told that 5.5% is too much, but that $273 is not. If you do the math, $273 is 5.5%. So it's all a matter of the perceptions of the people who are actually looking at the numbers. Meanwhile, we're aggressively working towards improving the efficiency of the university. We're making some very substantial program adjustments in our IT services. We've saved a considerable amount of money. For example, on this campus, I believe we had 4 or 5 different email systems. We no longer are going to have 4 or 5 different email systems. We're going to have one. Just the hardware savings of accommodating those systems are substantial. And there are a lot of other opportunities, both in the communications and the IT area, that we will capture. We have engaged a consultant who will come on board next month, whose assignment will be to look at the administrative structure of the university and look for opportunities to create efficiencies throughout the administrative process. And I think the reason we're using an outside consultant, frankly, is that no one's going to buy an internal review. We need to get external credibility for us to be able to assure people that we're doing the right things. And I think there are opportunities. We'll find some opportunities to save money. Meanwhile, all of the departments are taking significant budget hits. They continue. We just finished our 4th budget advisory group, BAG 4. We're trying to implement a strategic plan, which, coupled with everything else going on, keeps us very busy. On the good news side, U.S. News and World Report just came out with its most recent rankings for graduate programs. University at Albany has 10 programs ranked in the top 30. I'll go real quickly. Criminal Justice, number 2. Library and Information Science, 26. Rockefeller College of Public Affairs, 14. Information and Technology Management, 2. Nonprofit Management, 18. Public Finance and Budgeting, 7. Public Management Administration, 8. Public Works Analysis, 22. Public Policy Analysis, 22. Social Work, 12. Sociology, 28. That doesn't count Nano and a couple of other our programs because they're unique. So they are number 1 in the world, but there's just no competition relative to it, so you can't rank them. Again, not that I am competitive, but Stony Brook has 6 of their programs ranked in the top 30. Buffalo has 3. Binghamton has none. 6 and 3 is 9. That's 1 less than 10. So we have more than the others combined. I'm showing off my math prowess here. Are we doing an enrollment management update here, or should I do it?
You should do it. I'm just here.
This is the 5th year in a row that we've received more than 20,000 applications. We expect to enroll around 2,250 freshmen. It's comparable to the class that we enrolled last year in terms of quality, which is good news. We have had a great deal of assistance this year from our alumni in helping our recruiting efforts. We've had receptions in New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Syracuse, and Westchester that have helped us in terms of our recruiting efforts. We continue to look to expand that program so that we can get more and more of our alums actively engaged in recruiting students on our behalf, especially in the out-of-state areas, which I think are critically important for us going forward. Our open houses have been a great success. We had one in the spring where we actually over 2 days and 1,200 students participated, which was a terrific turnout. Our timing has been not great because one of our significant open houses happened to occur just before the St. Patrick's Day weekend, and we all know that that was not a particularly good time to have parents around, at least. Congressman Tonko is our 2011 Burton Lecturer. He received an award, and also Larry Brandt, Thomas Constantine, Bill Hedberg, Kathleen Tanner, Pete Granis, and Mike Castellano all received awards from the different schools, but since we're going quickly, I won't get into more. U.S. Department of Energy awarded CNSE a $57 million grant to launch a solar center. That is the largest federal grant ever awarded to a single academic institution. That's a meaningful $57 million. So it is, it's a feather in CNSE's cap. It's probably a place to grow for our energy initiatives. Our microelectronics or nanoelectronics initiative will be expanded into nanomedicine and also nanoenergy, and I think that's a great step up for the university because there is a significant expansion. You see the construction on Fuller Road that's going on. You'll also note that the Washington Avenue is scheduled to be renovated. What will end up happening is that Washington Avenue will be redirected. There'll be a flyover Fuller Road. Where the 6 Mile Water Works is, there will be the Washington Avenue extension area and the current roadbed and some of the property that's north of the current roadbed will be annexed to Nano for expansion away from the neighbors. So it's exciting. I'm going to skip a lot of this stuff. Bill Clinton was on campus. 4,500 people attended. Many of you did. It was a wonderful event. It was a terrific indication of the type of engagement that our students are so very much involved with. They did a wonderful job. I know we got some bad press in terms of the cost, but every penny of the money that was paid by our students went to the Bill Clinton Foundation, not to Bill Clinton. And that foundation pays for example, relief work in Haiti and some of the other things. None of it went to Bill Clinton himself. We also had Maureen Dowd on campus. I like Maureen Dowd. I know some of you may not, but I think she's very good. We had the former Minister of Science and Technology in Japan, Mr. Omi, on campus. That was quite the... I didn't realize how important he was in terms of the Japanese economic infrastructure, and he was very impressed with Nano and also the university. I'm going to skip over a few of these things. Oh, one important one. Our students won first place in the Newman's Own Award. Newman's Own is, Paul Newman, salad dressing and all of the others. They had a national competition. We have a group on campus known as the Third World Impact. They partnered with another group called the Giving Circle. Their proposal is that they're involved with building an elementary school in Uganda for 500 students. They won first prize of $25,000, and this is a national competition. Very, very proud of our kids. And if you look around in terms of our students, we just celebrated volunteerism on campus. Last year, we had 6,800 students that were involved in one way or another in the not-for-profit community. Among their accomplishments were, in the Relay for Life for the American Cancer Society, they raised $85,000, bringing their total amount raised since 2005, these are students, to $500,000. Fardeen wants to know why he didn't get that money. Where is he?
Relay for Fardeen.
Relay for Fardeen. But at the end of the day, this is just a small example of the numerous activities that our students engage in. Our athletes, for example, are 2,500 hours of each year of voluntary contributions to local community organizations. And one that you probably like is that we have a research team, Tomek
Sikowski.
It doesn't pronounce the way it's spelled.
It's not phonetic.
Was one of the researchers that was heavily involved in the Jeopardy Watson competition, where the computer beat the past Jeopardy champions. Just to give you, it's a fun thing, but our people are pretty much very much engaged. And last, our women's lacrosse team is ranked number 5 in the nation, the only undefeated Division I program in the country. And they are playing for the America East Tournament Championship. They were undefeated in the league on Sunday against University of Maryland, Baltimore County, which they only beat by one goal last time. So if you're in town, they're a lot of fun to watch. Saturday at 1 o'clock. Okay, so...
Where are they playing?
On Fountain Field.
Remind you all to... Fardeen is going to give an update on fundraising, which is a very, very good report. He's done a wonderful job, and I'm not going to cover his ground. Remind you about commencement. You're all invited. We have Greg McGuire as our undergraduate speaker, and Randy Cohen will be the graduate commencement speaker. Both are alums. They should be both very entertaining. And on a closing note, our 14th president, Vince O'Leary, who was president at the university from 1977 to 1990, passed away. Interestingly enough, one of his many significant achievements was the creation of the School of Public Health, which on Saturday night tomorrow night is celebrating its 25th anniversary in a gala. And Vince was supposed to be in attendance to be honored at the gala, but he was instrumental in bringing this university to the next level. So, if you keep him in your thoughts, he was 86 years old, and that's the end of my report. I'll take questions.
Let me graduate. It was good.
Yes.
Question back to the beginning. When you talked about the increased enrollment, that plan is just for us. That's not necessarily for the other university centers as well.
Just
that's
us.
That's unique to us.
Yeah. The increased enrollment is a function of needing to come up with a plan that increases revenue substantially in order to accommodate the economic development.
Build new dormitories or anything like that?
Yeah, and I think that, we're building dormitories.
Right.
And the rehabilitation of the downtown dorms will actually probably end up restoring Brubaker back to the university.
That's what I was gonna ask, yeah.
And we probably will have additional opportunities. There's a plan right now for the Albany School District. They would like very much to move out of the current high school location and move to the Harriman campus.
Oh, really?
And they would very much like to develop the current high school location for a lot of uses, and one of which is dormitories. But if we did it, we would not do it. It would be a private developer, and it would be for graduate and international students if they could build them affordable enough.
Right.
Our dilemma is using the vehicles available to us, we can't build them affordable enough.
They opened that high school when I was a student here.
Any other questions?
As far as tuition increase, would that go into effect in the fall?
It would go into effect in the fall. If we would like it to go into effect in the fall.
Is there enough time for this?
Well, the bills haven't gone out, but we're hoping, first of all, the legislative session is anticipated to be over by June 20th. If we can get some sort of action before that time, we should be okay in terms of the bills going out.
the architecture that would be put in place with this legislation would still require the legislature, George, to approve tuition increases going forward? Or?
Five-year, the plan, I don't know what the result will be. The plan will enable us to have a period of 5 years where we can deal with a rational tuition plan capped at 5.5%. The idea is $273 one shot is not going to do much.
Per year.
Each year is capped at 5.5%.
Right.
And we believe that the tuition plus proposal will also be 5 years with a plus cap.
And then it's revisited after 5 years?
Hopefully it works and we get additional flexibility beyond the 5 years. But right now, this proposed legislation only addresses the next 5 years.
It's hard to monetize anything that has a five-year window.
I've tried to say that, but they're not exactly financial people. Anybody else? Sorrell's writing all of the points that he has to edit.
I'm sure whatever the legislation is, it'll look somewhat different by the time it's adopted.
I'm certain that that's the case, that it will look different than I just described.
Sure. Well, it's good. From my perspective, it's good to see that whether it's literally or metaphorically, we have a seat at the table, and I think, that's yeoman's work, rebalancing that equation and getting it off of the two university centers back to the four university centers. And just in my passings and talking with Dr. Jackson, too, and I think we all recognize what an achievement that is given the momentum that Buffalo and the Western delegation have, and not that there's any victory at all yet, and I don't even know that what we ultimately get, as you point out, is going to be able to achieve what we need to achieve, allow us to achieve what we need to achieve, but I think tremendous kudos to everybody here, George, at the administration, and everybody else who's a stakeholder in the community who really came together to recognize how important this was.
The senior staff and a lot of the support people have done yeoman's work. I don't pretend to be the author of all this stuff. They did fabulous jobs. They fleshed out the concepts and have done a great job in sending the proposal. Both Steve and Vince and Jim and others and Vardeen and others in the room, probably everybody who's sitting behind me, certainly John was. John is now doesn't speak anymore because he. everybody in this room was instrumental in getting this thing done. The other thing I would say is that your advocacy, if you're in, whether you're in a social environment, whether you're, it's really, really important that if you get an opportunity to do something that with one of our legislative officials or one of our government officials to promote the importance of this legislation, because it is critically important for this university to be able to expand its portfolio. First of all, we need rational in order just to balance the books. You can't lose 40% of your state assistance over a three-year period and anticipate that you're going to be the same university you were when you started. We need to rebuild, and we need that much at least to create a new base and hopefully compound over the next 5 years to get back to where we were, hopefully smarter than where we were, and hopefully using that money more judiciously than we did in the past. But we still need to have that additional operating support. So if you can advocate on our behalf, it would be greatly appreciated. And frankly, I think we'll ultimately end up with at least a letter for you guys to all sign on to, if you're comfortable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you're comfortable to sign on. And of course, if you're not comfortable, by all means, don't. But
I did get a letter from a senator out in Western New York saying why he appreciated that Albany wanted to be part of the process, but right now he wanted to go with UB 2020.
I think that is the consensus of the Western New York delegation. It's certainly the subtext to this whole thing.
I mean, I think the other really important thing that George talked about, but this epiphany, if you want to call it that, from the local delegation, the local community, really recognizing how at risk the Albany area was. If this bill didn't include Albany, and it has been really, really critical, And kudos to George Hurst and the Times Union, you know, our assemblymen, senators, everybody who stepped up and really now invested in this process and making sure. To me, that was one of the bigger transformational things that occurred in this process.
We got every member of our delegation to supply us with a quote when we did our release, every single member, both sides of the aisle.
Are our assemblymen coming out in favor of rational tuition now?
Our assemblymen are coming out in favor of the inclusion of Albany in anything that occurs.
Whatever it is.
But they have yet to actually come out in favor of it.
Exactly. Right. And that's key, isn't it?
It's very key, and that's really where our efforts are now. We need to get champions.
I think that when we met that meeting last week and you spoke, I think it finally hit them that when they thought that they were going to be a second tier. And that really was a turnaround because, as you know, in this country, everybody wants to be number one. And you made it very clear. And I think that there, I saw a big turn. And I think that this is going to go forward. And I think now they're beginning to recognize how important the university is to this community, that if we're going to move forward, there are things that we have to do. And they're going to have to be supportive of it. And I think we're getting where we need to go.
Yeah, and I appreciate it, James, because we did get a lot of traction from the community as a result of that that session last week. And I think the fact that it was put together so quickly with so many diverse business and community leaders in attendance shocked everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, oh my. Yeah. They really do have community support, and we're going to build on that. We've got lots of plans to build on it.
Keep that momentum going for other things beyond this, too.
George, do you think, looking at the tea leaves, does look anything that's probably going to be like a last night of session sort of deal? It's more more of a kind of a quasi statement, I think.
Yeah, well, my concern is sequence. I'm very, very disturbed about some of the things I've heard about sequencing. My opinion is that the governor has shown his support. It's up to us to generate the kind of support that's necessary from the legislature. It's all horse trading, as you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that the assembly wants rent control, the renewal of rent control. You know, I know that there's $40 million, Vince, CUNY money?
Yeah.
$40 million of CUNY money that's sort of sitting in abeyance, the appropriation for that being held by the Senate. You know, all of this is horse trading.
Right.
You know, my hope is that nothing happens in a sequence that disadvantages us in the horse trade.
Yeah, from a strategic position, you're
absolutely
right. Tactically, you're going to have to be there.
And that's really where I'm looking at. I'm looking at sequence. I keep saying that in the meetings that we have, that that's critically important. And I think some people scratch their head and say, what are you talking about? But to me, sequence is critically important.
I agree with you.
Yeah, we don't want to be in a position where we'll get to us next year.
Yeah. It's an election year. You might as well forget the opportunity to get any kind of tuition relief in an election year.
That's what happened last year.
Yep, you're absolutely right, Pat.
Okay. Well, I know we'll all be vigilant. And, George, just thank you. Is the student rep here now, Sorrell?
No, Steve had to leave to get home. There was some sort of family emergency.
Okay.
He cut off right in the middle of exam week, unfortunately.
All right. I'm sorry to hear that. So we're going to go on to the updates and start with the faculty. Susanna?
First, I'd like to thank everybody for the kind words and the resolution. And apropos of that, my replacement next year as faculty representative will be Professor Andy Lyons from the theater department. She'll be seeing her next year here. I'd also like to thank everybody for giving me an excuse to be here and not at my desk grading end-of-term things. very briefly, because we have a lot of other things on the list here, I just wanted to mention the one sort of big thing that's come through the Senate in the past month or two, and that is the continuing discussion of our general education requirements for undergraduates. You may recall that about a year and a half ago, SUNY Central changed its bare minimum of general education requirements, and the Senate's been working on responding to that and trying to reformulate what we do here on this campus. Very quickly, the goal is to, of course, obey what SUNY Central wants us to do, but also to put our own UAlbany stamp on general education so that It adds something to the UAlbany degree, right? So above and beyond the bare minimum. I don't think that's going to be resolved this academic year, but it's getting close, and there's a lot of momentum, and so I'm hoping that that will be finished off in the fall. And quickly, apropos of that, I don't know how many of you saw Fred LeBrun's column a few days back. I almost wrote an angry letter to him, but I decided it was probably not worth my time. I felt that he really misrepresented what's been going on with that. It was sort of a side comment, a backsided comment or a compliment in that he did emphasize the importance of undergraduate education, and I'm all for that. But he also implied that we were somehow cheapening our general education here on this campus, and that's absolutely not the case. And if anybody wants details of that, I can give you an earful after the meeting. I think that's it.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Suzanne? Okay. Is the graduate student here?
Yes.
Thanks. Oh, I'm sorry.
In terms of programming, the GSO held our end-of-the-year President's Gala. We had a nice cruise out on the Hudson River, and we'll be having an end-of-the-year barbecue event at Darnister Barbecue in Troy to kind of celebrate the end of finals. We also held our elections recently. Heidi Nichols was re-elected for a second term as president. Our vice president will be switching roles to our multicultural chair, and our programming chair will serve as vice president. I've been reelected as this representative to this body, and I think that this ongoing service to these students is really important. In my memory of 7 years now at UAlbany, I've never seen a student able and more importantly willing enough to serve 2 years as president, so I think Heidi has a lot of momentum behind her for improving the GSO next year. Our graduate student organization activity fee, which funds all of the activities we do in the GSO office as well as all of our graduate student groups, was up for a vote and will remain mandatory, so we'll have a budget. Likely, if it got voted down, it was a voluntary fee. We wouldn't be doing a whole lot. We also passed 2 constitutional amendments to establish term limits and redefine the responsibilities of our graduate senators. We'll be opening our office during finals week for extended hours to give graduate students another place to study. And actually, in the next 15 minutes, we'll start our last GSO assembly meeting over in the Hall of Fame room inside the arena to approve our working budget. And lastly, the SUNY-wide student assembly a couple weeks ago, our graduate student organization website was voted as the best website, which is impressive since it's about 3 years old, but we'll take it.
That's great. Great. And congratulations on serving again. We'll see you next year. Okay, are you and Bill doing this as a tag team, or how are we going to do this?
This should be Bill's report because it reflects. I'm sorry, I can't hear anything.
We're not saying anything.
We're just passing something out, Pat.
I'm
not showing my teaching skills. I'm guessing that you're going to start looking at them while I.
Kay is distributing a copy of the Alumni Association's annual report, Pat, and we'll send that to you after this meeting.
Everyone have a copy?
Don't worry.
I'll see if there's a picture of you in here.
We're waiting for the copy to go around. I just wanted to tell you, this is like a welcoming home for me, homecoming, because this is my mentor sitting here, Dr. Sorrell Chesson. I worked under Sorrell. You know, I studied, when I was studying in the seminary after working for Sorrell, that's not the reason I went to the seminary, but...
it might be the reason most people go to the seminary.
Bishop Tutu said that I was fortunate to study under Desmond Tutu a year in Africa, and he, what I came away with was one thing, and that is to say, a person is a person only through other people, and I am what I am today because of Sorrell. I wouldn't be in this field of I wouldn't be in higher education. I wouldn't be certainly in the ministry. So it's all your fault.
Is that all right. 2 R's and 2 O's?
Does everyone has a copy?
Yes.
Okay. This, as I said, should really be Bill's report. But I'm just going to highlight a few things. On the first page, a wonderful greeting from Bill. So I'd like to call your attention to that. In particular, up at the top, you'll notice he refers to the strategic plan. Well, frankly, due to his visionary leadership, he initiated the strategic planning process and then enabled all of us to then follow through on a 3-year plan, the result of which, after a lot of hard work on Bill's part, the other officers, and the planning committee, you'll see our vision for 2014. This is a 3-year plan. And the most important part to me is in the second words would say, we are a leader in engaging alumni and students in the University of Albany through focused and meaningful communication and services that instill success, pride, spirit, loyalty, and affinity. Then you'll see the five goals and the mission statement. Now to look at all of, under his visionary leadership, what Bill has accomplished. Under programs, I'm so proud to talk about the Enrich the Student Experience, especially if you look under, I'm on the page with the Great Dane. Mm-hmm. You look under alumni scholarships. We work very hard at that and intend to continue and increase that. Another aspect is our funding of institutional academic priorities. And again, you can see School of Criminal Justice, Public Health, to name a few. And then George referred to our very successful student receptions, which of course we will be continuing to increase in. Then we have a quick bio on the next page, couple pages, of our four new members of the alumni board. We have, in the interest of full disclosure, our August 31st, 2010 and 2009 financials, and then lastly, a list of all the board. This is your work, Bill.
Yeah, Kay has done a great job with the strategic planning initiative, and you know, we didn't want something that was static. We wanted something that was practical. We didn't want a mouse ate tongue esque 5-year plan sticking on the shelf and not doing something. So, my predecessors, and then continuing on, our goal is to have the vice president take a leadership role in future planning, so that they, when they become president, they're working on programs that they were instrumental in overseeing. And so, we're going to continue that model. It's been successful, and so again, it's. We're looking forward to the next 3 years, and I think if you recall to the last council meeting, many of the presentations that were made by the various departments on campus specifically highlighted, and it wasn't pre-planned or preordained, but they highlighted specific support that the student alumni partnership has enabled on this campus, and we continue to look for ways to improve on that. We want to make sure that that when we partner with the various constituencies on campus, that it's a win-win proposition, and we think we are accomplishing that. We look forward to continuing that role. So, again, we're looking forward to another great couple of years.
Thank you, Bill. I mean, I would say from my perspective, it's been a noticeable contribution and advancement that you've made, and the profile and contribution that the Alumni Association has made under your tenure has been incredibly significant, and you know, Kay, I know you're looking forward to succeeding that, and I'm sure Bill will be closely behind helping you there.
Thank you.
I think under old business, I mean, we talked about last time the refining the role of college council, including this body, to review and recommend major campus plans, and I think Sorrell, I know we're going to talk about several campus-wide initiatives and plans today that come under that rubric. Did you want on this agenda, are we covering anything at this point now, item 7?
No, I wasn't thinking of discussion of it, because when John Giarrusso is preparing now the PowerPoint, if something comes up, we have John Riley here, because the resolution that we have coming after this, there may be some questions that come up, and Pierre will introduce it, but John will be here as a resource for any questions that come up about that relative to this policy.
Great.
So I thought as we go into Giarrusso's presentation, a couple of moments, that will lead possibly to some
And so the backdrop of that we've talked about before, and John's going to go over the capital construction update for the university, and then I think sort of in the back of that mind, and I know we have counsel here that will guide us on, you know, what the resolution needs to say as it relates to our review and recommendation, but, you know, with no further ado, I think I'll turn it over to John.
Go ahead. We would hope this projector works, of course.
Pat? Pat, are you there? Okay.
It's warming up.
Is the projector on?
Yeah, it's good. It's on.
You're on.
You got an image, John?
Well, I have about 2 hours worth of material, but I understand I don't have 2 hours worth of time, and I'm cutting into it with this projector problem here, but what I'm going to do is go through major capital projects here on campus
and give you a little backdrop about how we arrived at getting these projects started. And I'll focus, obviously, on the housing project as well. Just by way, just to start you on the housing project, you received a copy of the executive summary of a study that was done in 2009. This was based on the need for new housing here on campus to address shortfalls.
Do you want to start that or no? You're all set.
No, I'm still waiting.
Okay,
I think because the teleconference. So we have the choice of cutting off the person who's on the
telephone.
Kids are both. Pat, are you there? Patricia?
I have already done it.
Maybe you cut her off.
We did this once. Okay, well, why don't you phase it out and let Joyce call her just in case, because she was in the middle of the meeting and then going to join us. So let me have Joyce call. Go right ahead.
I think a free tip.
Remember that teleconference thing?
You're off. John's off.
We had that. And for free. It's like the content for free.
Yeah, but you at the menu, you wanted steak.
And I wasn't complaining. The food was wonderful. I was right across the street.
You had to send a car for me.
Did you take it off the teleconference?
Oh, shit. I didn't know you followed Cornell closely. Which he was starting first line. I've gotten back in here because my son and daughter are tonight now.
You worked out.
No, you had mentioned that last time, so that's why. They're certainly, they're having a good season so far.
Oh, yeah, they're hosting the Ivy League championship this week.
Tough game tonight on the lights. I think the weather's going to stink. But there's so much parity. You could have some of those games. It's amazing how I agree. I know it's a huge point. And it kind of recruits some great players. And these new kids that you have on the reservation and that's not really how we're so kid number two. They're all the players. That new talented kid will become a huge industry. Barry Johnson's kid. He was actually played three good ones in the game. I saw it.
I know.
He played the third kid because he hadn't got into it for a single game all year. And he made the big switch to the freshman at the beginning.
Yeah, I was going
to. It was tough to make last season. Yeah, not in that field. I don't know if it's just the goalies really having a hard time picking up the ball. You can see them.
Yeah.
They need to adjust the lights. Sorry to say.
I don't do ITS on campus.
Obviously.
Yeah,
I started.
All right, I have a lot of material here. I'll just go quickly through it, and I'll focus, obviously, on the housing portion. This picture here sort of tells it all. This is a photo in 1964 when the podium was built. And basically, the theme of the presentation is that we're still not done working on and upgrading the podium. What I want to get through with this slide here is that the investments we're going to talk about on capital are made as a result of conversations and input from not only the university president, who ultimately approves the plans we present every couple months, but we have all sorts of dean's meetings. We have a group on campus that reviews architectural design. We have a classrooms committee. We have agencies outside of our own who are governing and regulators for our spending as well as providing funds. And we do deal with municipalities and neighborhood associations as well. Right now, we have about $373 million in active capital projects that are either in some phase of design or on the other end in some phase of closeout or punch list. Most of it, or about half of it, is core maintenance, roofs, mechanical systems, windows, etc. $132 million is the major projects, which are the new B-School that we'll talk about, the athletics project we'll talk about, the campus center expansion, the res hall portion, which is self-financed. It's not a grant. It comes from student fees. The lion's share of this, about $61 million, is the project we're going to talk about in a second. And then another sliver here, some for staff that finance or support this project, as well as some security upgrades. This map, color-coded by age of buildings, tells the whole story on the Uptown campus. Red is bad, and red means no renovations since no construction. So that's not good. This is the podium up here. It's about 21 acres worth of space and 1.8 million square feet of usable space. And the challenge is, how do you renovate that? And so what we basically have done is put in place a zoned kind of concept here so that we can afford to do the work as well as have the campus tolerate the work as it goes on. We have a west zone, an east zone, and a center zone in terms of concepts. On the west zone, building 27, which is the existing B8 or business administration building, will be renovated as soon as the B school is up and going. We're still short of about 35,000 square feet, though. We'll have to figure out that puzzle. On the east zone, this is the science buildings. We are dearly in need of a new science building so that we can vacate, hopefully, the chemistry building here and renovate this side. Our center zone is being actively worked on right now. We're going to expand the campus center by some 50,000 square feet, which allows us to renovate the existing building. And we're right now at the end of a study for our library to phase renovation of that 290,000 square foot building. But here's the challenge, is because you've got 21 acres worth of area that you need to renovate, every contractor needs to get somewhat close to stage. Unfortunately, though, that's how everyone wants to get to the podium. What you see here is an overlay over the next 4 years. We're trying to pull apart the pieces so that we can occupy the university as well as renovate it at the same time. This map here is basically what's going to be with construction and staging for 11-12, basically the entire campus except for the south side. We were working on the south side last year, so it's now time for the north side to have some fun. Of note, Liberty Terrace Apartments, we're going to talk about that in more depth. It's the object of a resolution. This is the site of the apartment complex. This is the existing perimeter road. This is the new reconfigured perimeter road. It's about 15 acres here, and then the whole site that we're working on is close to about 20. There's a lot of exciting things in this project outside of just housing. I mentioned the road, which is important. What happened here is now we'll have housing on the inside of perimeter road, so we'll cut down on the pedestrian car conflicts that we have on Empire Commons, which is on the northwest side of campus. Or I'll get to the site benefits in a second, but here's the site.
Where actually, bearing-wise, I'm lost.
Forgive me. The pond is right here.
Gotcha.
It's Indian Quad.
Let me go back.
Sorry.
It's right here.
Okay.
So here's where the new housing will be.
Thanks. I thought so.
Okay, so then you're going to dump the road
just off of Western Avenue.
The outside, okay. Right?
Thank you.
Swing out into where we used to have on the outside, right? You're going to swing the road to the outside of it.
Yes,
and
you're going to
take care of all those speeding tickets, Rob.
Right here's the construction zone. It's the pile driving phase design. We just finished our pile driving on Thursday, thank goodness. 496 piles later, 2.5 months. And we're putting in pile caps, foundations. This building should be all enclosed by October. It's being constructed with block and plank, precast concrete, 5 stories high. It'll go very quickly, and then once it's enclosed over the winter, we'll have the benefit of being enclosed.
and doing all the fit-out, finishes, mechanical systems. This is a LEED Gold facility. We have a geothermal heating system, heat pump. We received a $2.8 million grant from the Department of Energy to offset half the cost of the heat pump system. It has maximum daylighting, it has locally sourced materials, concrete. It has rain gardens, everything you would think that you would need for LEED Gold. We basically have it in here. It'll be a very efficient building.
What was the total cost of that?
This is the heat pumps?
No, of the
whole project, $61 million. And that includes about $10 million worth of site-specific costs, which are endemic to the site here, if I can go back. The realignment of the road cost about $3 million. The pile driving need was about $5 million. And then the sanitary. There's a whole backstory on that, but we have our sanitary system.
No pun intended.
There is a backstory on that.
Who's the contractor and who's the PM on that?
The Chase is the contractor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Who's the PM?
DASME as well as us.
Okay.
The dormitory part.
Have you guys used you for the Chase before?
No, we haven't. They're very good.
Yeah, I know.
One last question. Did you do design build on this, or how did you do that?
This was a
no design. No design build in.
You can't without legislation.
It's beyond the pale, which means add $10 million to the job because we can't do design build.
Okay, sorry.
Part of what we're doing.
Yeah. Another hot button.
This is basically it's a W-shaped building. Here's one end. Here's the center building as well. It's 5 stories high with a lot of glass, precast concrete. Here's the typical suite or room.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So this is undergrad dorm, or is it?
It's aimed for upperclassmen. It'll be based on lottery, so okay. Usually it's seniors.
Juniors and seniors. Juniors and seniors.
Okay.
500 beds, 250 in each wing. Each apartment has a shared living and living room and kitchen, and then each bedroom, there are 4 bedrooms and 2 baths. Similar to Empire, but Empire Commons is slightly larger and has a washer and dryer in the apartment, and this building will have washer and dryers on each floor. There'll be a commons building in the middle with athletic facilities, conference facilities, and a dining option, or a retail dining option. Here's the building in the BIM model.
There's going to be a retail dining option in the project out there, even though it's
on
the campus? Yep,
retail in the sense it's not a meal plan because of the
meal
kitchen.
Right, but it's like it's the same kind of thing like at Nanotech where they have their own, you know.
There'll be a small cafe in there, yeah.
Really? Wow.
But those students could be on a meal plan. They just go over to the campus center.
Yeah, they're the same access as anyone else. Right. Just not, we're not going to build cafeterias in here.
How do you make the decision to go LEED Gold versus a lesser standard, and what's the cost of that differential?
I'm just going off the top of my head. It probably costs us another $250K to go LEED Gold.
That's it?
Rain gardens and maintenance. I mean, there's a recurring cost. Obviously.
Well, we got $2.8 million
back. That offsets it.
So it offsets much of the cost.
And the premium cost for this, I assume, right?
This will be priced comparable to Empire Commons. So
right.
It's around $9,500 a year.
So we can recoup the higher cost factor associated with the upkeep and stuff.
All the dorms are self-sustaining.
Right. But the dining area, I mean, you've got to assume a contract with a third party. They cover all that, right?
Charwell's.
Right.
Is our auxiliary services.
Yes. So
but let me just be clear that the upkeep I was talking about, premium, is on some of the LEED Gold portions. But having a tighter building with better construction.
Yeah, it's cheaper.
I mean, this building, as opposed to Empire, will be a low maintenance building, and we're pretty pumped about that.
How are you doing on overruns right now? And everything's been pretty good. It's probably lump sum, right? The whole thing, and then T&M on the back? Uncertain. Are we in budget? Let's keep it that way. No. Keep it
simple. We're in budget. We put in a healthy contingency. We went over about 1,300 linear feet of steel for our piles. We had anticipated a lot more. We're a little over on our sanitary because of municipal.
Because of the extra distance, do we have like busing going over? Because that's a lot farther from campus, really. Than
that's somewhat equal distant as.
Is it really?
Yeah, let me go back to that.
It seems longer visually, but. Maybe
right here, and they'll walk basically to this corner.
I hear you.
Freedom out here.
Side of the podium.
visually it seems longer because you have the water and then, you know, all that stuff.
We'll cut some paths
to give us. So here's what the site will look like if you envision flipping that map over. Here's the pond, here's the MIC UAB. This is the new road. Right now we have a purple path on campus which has only one phase completed, but there's six total. So what we'll do is we'll continue the purple path from right where it ends by the ball field, bring it all the way through the site, all the way by Gore's Sculpture Studio, and then we'll create a path along Justice Drive here up to Indian Quad. There's 350 spots for our students. There's a new rec field, intramural softball field being built. There'll be a small pocket park right in here with benches and landscaping. There'll be a whole trail network through the pond that we're going to improve. A lot of landscaping that has yet to be installed, obviously, and another sidewalk that will be installed here as well. So for a lot of people like to take the loop around the campus to jog or walk. Now they have multiple avenues. This road will open in the middle of June, right after commencement. We're closing both ends of the existing road so that we can do the transition, put these connectors on.
Hey John, what's the funding source for? How does that work?
This is all backed by student loan revenues.
But there's a bond deal that's floated, secured by revenues, or what's the mechanism?
It's a DASNY bond that's secured actually by the revenues of the entire SUNY system.
Okay, so,
it's a blanket bond that's part of
it. So it's not a one-off financing.
Yeah, this one's part.
Okay.
No, this is part of the, they did three of them.
So that's number one of what I call the big three projects. The next one is the B-School building, which I'm sure Don Siegel may talk about a little bit. This is an exciting project. Again, right after commencement, we'll start erecting fences around the site, which is right out here. I'll show you the site in a second, and start excavation. This is pretty neat. I use this in presentations to tell the rest of the campus community that this indeed is a B-School building, but it's also a classrooms building. There's 28 new classrooms in this building and 10 group study rooms as well. So the construction of this building not only would have propelled the school district, but it would also enable us to get renovations done in our lecture centers. So if you just peel back the floors of the building, blue is the 61 offices or so of the B school, and then we have instructional space on the third floor. Again, yellow and gold is instructional space on the second floor. On the first floor, which is on grade, this is the entrance here. You have the B school has some of their centers and a training room right out here in front. And more instructional space here and study rooms as well. Right out here will be a lobby area, so that somewhat close to the university's bus stop. So in clement winter, during the winter, students can actually be in here waiting for the bus inside. And then on the below grade level, these will be the larger classrooms, study rooms, and a cafe. And there'll be two tunnel connections back to the podium. One will be a service tunnel, like our traditional service tunnels. And this tunnel here will connect over to our lecture center area, so it'll take high-use instructional by LCs straight to this high-use classroom building.
That's pretty great.
Here's what they call the living room on the second floor. It's multi-purpose space. It gives you an idea of the kind of finishes in the building. Here's the site. We're in this building right here, the entry building. Here's the circle, obviously. Here's where the building will go. This is the scale. Here's where the new bus stop will be. This used to be visitor parking. We replicated the spots on what we call the earlobe blocks, east and west. And these will be open after commencement. We took a lot of diseased trees down here. It was somewhat shocking when we took these pine trees down. But most of our pine trees, if you look out the window, you'll see they're brown. They're suffering from a fungal disease called Diplodia, and it's not curable and it's spreading. So we replace this instead of having a one culture or species on campus, we have a diverse selection of deciduous trees. And they're all in there. It looks pretty pretty. This is just a photo of when we were building this building. And we're going to have to do this, obviously, in two locations when we build the new B school. I show this to the campus because the disruption is pretty tremendous. Here through the next two and a half years, this will be the fence and staging area right here on this side.
So this will be open in the fall of 2013, that's the plan?
Yes.
What about the new dorm complex? When is that supposed to
That'll happen? Be ready for occupancy in August 2012.
12. Mm-hmm.
Number three in the big three is the tower fountain repair, and someone should do one of these if you want me to go faster, because I do have a lot of material. This is the big project. Here's what we're doing on campus. You've probably read about the fountain, but we are renovating the fountain, but we're also renovating the water tower, as well as the smaller fountain as well. This is a photo of 1965. The original water tower was built. This is a functioning water tower. It's 248 feet high to the top. There's 311,000 gallons of water in this thing. And what it does is it regulates water pressure on campus. If everyone flushes at the same time, the water level changes in here because it adjusts for the water pressure. It's also necessary for fire suppression if, God forbid, it's never needed in the towers. But there's functioning parts in here. There's a steam heat system in here to make sure it doesn't freeze up like a block of ice in the winter. Here's a picture from 70 when it's brand spanking new. But if you look and take a photo inside, we've got issues with corrosion. Our steam heat system needs to be repaired and upgraded. Needs to be renovated. We call it the mother of all challenging renovation projects because in order to renovate it, we have to wrap it, obviously, in scaffold and in sound batting as well, because in order to put paint on it, we're going to have to sandblast this thing. And you will basically see a giant scaffold-wrapped edifice in the middle of the campus. The other challenge is getting the contractor and all the equipment there from the edge of the podium, and then lowering the sandblasting equipment somehow through a lift down into the fountain area. So this job, this fountain tower job, not only will address sort of like doing your kitchen, you do your countertops, your cabinets, hey, let's do this, let's do that while we're there. Well, what we're doing as well is addressing the fountain, because it's got original technology in it. A whole pump room below needs to be upgraded. And all these pipes, plumbing, they leak. We lose a lot of water, and it costs a lot of money for water in Alton. And all this whole system here needs to be replaced. We're going to do that, but while we're down here, the single pane glass that has corroded sections, that's all coming out for energy fissure. And we have to address and repair the stairs as well. While we're doing the fountain, we're also addressing deficiencies and opportunities to improve the fountain. So I mentioned all these committees we have on campus. So what we arrived at is the notion to allow more active engagement of the fountain area. So what we have after it will be rebuilt will be basically a walkway through the center of the fountain, so that more students and faculty and staff can actually enjoy the fountain. Basically, this is what it will look like in the rendering. We'll have the fountain jets, obviously, and with a center water feature as well. But the nice part about that is it'll have lights, so at night it'll look attractive.
Those LEDs you're using?
Yes.
And then and we'll make sure they're UL listed for water, yes. Unlike the front. We had to replace them.
Oops.
The intent, let me back up just 1 second. That's not for you, I'll get there. The intent is to make sure that the fountain here is not a vast concrete wasteland for most of the year. It's not attractive at all. So what's going to happen down here is we're going to introduce landscaping, trees, greens, benches, improve the stairs, put in better pavers, and then, as I mentioned, put lights, and then come winter time, you'll be able to
skate.
Definitely. We couldn't figure out a meaningful way to add skate, the Zamboni challenge, as well as freezing. We went through that, but it didn't
happen.
We'll also be able to light, by the way, the top of the tower with LED lights, and that's part of the design. So purple growl, kind of purple, whatever we want to do. This is the other of the big project. This is the current conditions of our football field and track. We have a project right now that's in design that's going to kick off this fall to improve three things. It's here to upgrade and leak and speed to this mile. But our current track can't be used by our current track team, even though they're nationally renowned.
We get eight lanes now, Lee?
Actually, we're going to have nine. All right.
So you'll have the track that we can have meets in.
And we can use.
Yes.
You going to do anything about the wind on the berms on the side? I know how many people in this room used to run that thing, but I remember
we went to Chapel House to see if we could get help there.
Oh, yeah.
The project also includes adding a turf, artificial turf recreation field here for our intramural recreation. and then adding a multi-use football and soccer facility. Here's a concept rendering of what the facility would look like. It's around 6,000 seats here. Two levels, press box, elevator. What you do, here's the site right here. If you see, here's Fallon Field. Here's the bubble. And then the facility would be right down here. We take advantage of the natural berm that currently exists there. So when you come in right off this plaza here, you enter at the concourse level, look down on the field. It should be pretty spectacular.
Was this the stadium project we've been planning all along?
No.
Or is it
This is a far more reduced process. Yes. We're doing this in stages as we can afford it, and as we get private contributions. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, at least three, right, John? Three stages.
Well, at least four.
This is nothing is throwaway. This is the base. This is base based on what we have. This is pretty much the same attendance level, et cetera. It makes it it's going to be a north-south field. It's going to be what it's supposed to be. But this is strictly a bare-bones project that we can build on, and none of this is throwaway.
And this will be phase one, right?
Phase one. And if we can afford phase two and phase three over a period of time, we'll start working on that.
It'll be phase one, but something we're very proud of.
Yes, it'll look nice. It'll look nice.
Val Shannon Field, you can take it. You can
yeah,
jump start
it. Open to all, though.
And I'll quickly go through this. We're relocating our data center from its current place, which is below the podium deck. Not enough electricity or cooling. That's our service building.
And it floods occasionally, which is not good for a data center.
Computing equipment, no. So that'll go to our service building C. It'll be what you see in the darker is the new addition. Here's the concept of what it would look like. It would be an attractive anchor on that corner of campus. We're putting in three sky domes to protect the investments that we just put in underneath. We put in new stairwells, new window walls, and corrosion without exposing it to elements. Most of these openings were designed for sky domes, but never installed. So here's just some photos. It's currently almost finished, but here's some progress photos. Pretty sweet out there. We have a pretty active, very active classroom rehab. We have a classrooms committee that meets every year, grades classrooms in the top of the bottom, and the worst classrooms get addressed in that cycle. This new B school, as I mentioned, is going to get us quicker. In 2011-12, we'll be using these classrooms. Here's some photos of some upgraded rooms. Class labs, here's the poster child for some of our labs here in need of upgrade. But we're getting at those, we're getting 5 out of the 22. And when we get in there and get out, we refresh and improve everything. I put this photo in here because every year, with regard to rest halls, we upgrade at least 100 beds. Next year we'll be doing Seneca. We're doing service building C as a rehab. That'll pretty much look the same except for a small bump out. The grounds building and warehouse facility will be added to so that you can get them out of the commissary so that the data center can come in. You have to swap some codes. So you see an addition there. Downtown, we're focusing on the building envelope. 661 windows on the downtown campus will be reconditioned, repainted, and restored. And then the facade needs some major work. All this nice architectural features, so if you look up close, it's in need of a lot of help. We'll get it done over the next 2 years. Uptown, we're replacing the 2,600 rooms with the equivalent of 8 miles long of light fixtures, and the result will be 50% less energy use, and will yield over 200. That's a conservative estimate.
Is that a performance contract, or that's just an estimate?
No, that's out of performance. We did it through NYSERDA, or NYPO, rather.
Your Parthor?
Yeah, but we're paying for it out of the capital plan rather than taking it out of our operating dollars. We're doing a whole bunch of other work, and we'll have to dwell on this, but one thing that gets some press is a solar panel on a social sciences roof, as well as a lot of other roof replacements. Most notably, for lighting on campus, we've gone and reconditioned the box lights, so if you're here in the evening on the interiors, it's been very well lit and looking very good. We'll get to the exteriors very shortly over the summer. We upgraded our window wells. This is what happens when you have rain and exposure. But we went in there and redid them all, so that we have now the closed space underneath what used to be this terrarium, unused. There's now a student lounge that gets a lot of use. There are two of them there. Dutch Commons, which is the area between the quad and the podium, is always all the commons areas. Like out here, it's just a pedestrian car conflict. We ripped out, because we had to, all the deteriorating site utilities, replaced them, and hey, while we're here, let's really fix this the way it should be fixed. On the drawing board, we're going to expand the campus center by 50,000 square feet. This is just a concept. We don't know what it will look like in design. And then renovate another 25,000 as part of this $40 million job. And that'll be done sometime in 2014. I mentioned the library is being studied to renovate that. Building 27, once the new B school, will be the next one for renovation. On the podium, we only renovated one, the Arts and Sciences. 14 more or 13 more to go. If you just want to focus on the north side of the campus, we have improvements that we're going to make to the entryways. This here, we have a grade of basically F on traffic surveys. There's too many cars that back up on here because of traffic. We got to add a turn lane. Out here, we have to fix some of the traffic as well and improve the entry, get rid of some of the trees that are dying, and make it more of a nice entryway. Nothing you can do here with traffic in terms of amending the traffic patterns, but you improve the landscape in front. And then for Purple Path, this phase right here, right underneath the pine cones and the trees, and there's no path there currently. We'll be doing that next year, as well as these two areas, connect them into the new area in front of the school. This will be a big challenge. This is Indian Quad, Mohawk Tower. This is when it was being constructed. It was the last one constructed in 1970, and it's in the worst shape of all the four. So they really don't build them like they used to. This building suffers, to some extent they all do, but this one mostly from water infiltration problems.
Budget went down for every tower.
It did.
Yeah. Stuyvesant Tower was built first, and that had the highest budget, and the Colonial, the Bower Tower in Colonial was built, and that had the next highest, and it just go around in sequence.
Right.
They just kept cutting back every time the bill came.
So we're doing a scope of conditions. We have to figure out
called value engineering was faculty on the first couple of years.
There's 400 beds in this tower, so we have the benefit of having new beds coming online to help with our surge space. And I mentioned we're getting to the ponds and the trail improvements. Purple path phases, I mentioned. And we're also at the instruction and guidance of the SUNY and the construction fund. We're working on our 2013-23 facilities master plan. A lot of the work that I just explained to you came out of our 1998 master plan. This is a campus-wide initiative. We've had open sessions with the community, with our campus students.
And that addresses the $1 billion of, or whatever the number is, of deferred maintenance, is sort of that whatever's left after what you're doing now is included in the master plan, or?
Exactly. It's a conditions assessment. Where do we need to go to get our programs? What kind of adaptation do we need to do to the buildings? And then how do you do the scenario planning to move the puzzles around the podium to make that happen? And then you cost out the projects and the sequence for that.
It makes something very clear that this is all capital.
Right.
This is not money that's been diverted from the operating budgets of the university to accomplish this. And I will say one thing, John, you might, by looking at this, you know, make it obvious that John has a hell of a job and has done a hell of a job.
Absolutely.
Making the most out of what is reasonably limited resources. We have deferred maintenance on this campus in an assessment that was done 7 years ago.
7 years ago,
it was measured by an independent third party at $1 billion. We are using about $33 million a year for 5 years, $165 million to address that $1 billion deferred maintenance circumstance. John has done a great deal in terms of the first priority has been safety, because we have a lot of issues on this campus in terms of safety. Deteriorating stairways, problems with breaking cement, leaky lecture rooms, any number of different things, and he's done a fabulous job. And again, you know, this is paid for by capital and private contribution. The FF&E for the School of Business, well, Bardeen will talk to that, is done by private contribution. Much of our athletic facility is going to be dealt with by private contribution. So this is not going to impact the operating budgets on campus and will not impact the employment on campus or anything like that. And we're going to take every dollar they're willing to give us. So
it's critical work.
Yeah. Sorry, John.
No, that's okay.
But he's done a wonderful job.
No, thank you. I probably want to go back to the segue to the housing piece. That's the end of my briefing.
Any questions for John?
Good job.
Nice job, John.
Is there a student question about the housing? The ratio of beds to car spaces as compared to
0.7. There's more.
Yeah.
Empire was around 0.5.
See, that sounds like the same question that would come from faculty, too.
It is.
Parking spaces.
No, I don't have parking space question. I have a classroom space question. Is the square footage of classroom space in the new business building going to be roughly equivalent to what's in the old, in the current administration building?
It'll be more. The actual standard space guidance is more per station. Modern times and when the construction fund is in the 60s with the tablet on chair.
Great. Can I ask a question, George, about the library? Because we've had this come up at our firm. I mean, with what's going on in terms of computerization and all that kind of stuff, is there really enough needed? In other words, is there too much space in the library? Can there be a reduction in space in the library and dedicated instead to something else like classroom space and things?
Well, I will tell you that when I walk through the library, especially this time of year, there's not enough space.
Okay.
Kids are crawling all over. Now, the science library, which is basically the newest academic construction on campus, I believe, opened in 2000, that is largely student space and computer space. There are there are no books. I don't think there are the books in there?
Yeah,
there's not many.
There's collections and stacks in there.
They're in the basement.
Basement.
I was just curious because we had a floor and a half of library space, and now we have about a quarter of a floor.
No, in our library study, we're trying to figure out how to renovate the library. And going in, we thought, all right, we can surge within the building itself, and apparently not. We did it.
Yeah, I was curious. Sorry.
Actually, they need more space.
I was
projecting out the next 10 years
because of the computerization and stuff. Yeah, that's what we found.
But you know, the funny thing is, you'll see people in the library with computers, but they're in the library, and they need the study space.
We had a whole staff.
And we open this time of year. It's open 24 hours.
Yep,
24 hours a day. It's open.
Okay.
Does Middle States Accreditation have anything to say anymore about? They used to years and years ago about spacing in relation to teaching.
We just got the reaccredited, our 10-year reaccreditation completed, and I believe that part of the thing was a presentation on the capital facilities that went through.
Yeah.
So we did present all of our capital facilities and the plans going forward and all the other ratios. I'm not sure if there's a specific ratio that we met or didn't.
No, in fact, we didn't get pinged or criticized at all for facilities.
Great. Yeah, that's super.
John, did you set targets, like diversity targets, in all your construction projects that you've let, and then where are you with respect to trying to achieve and try to hit those targets? Best of your knowledge right now.
We're really good on procurement of goods and services, but not really tough on some of the subs. It's getting to the 5 and 3.
Right.
So we're almost there. On the housing project, we did it. On the construction, the larger B-school project, we're there.
Great.
The big dollar projects.
Great.
We're very mindful of that. And, of course, you know, what we've done, one of the WICS requirements and the other public works requirements, mm-hmm. which are very costly, frankly, especially from a reporting perspective, it increases the price of all of these jobs.
By a third. I estimated in my
a
projects.
Lot. It's a lot. I'll be honest with you, not having design build available is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous.
Good job, man.
Thanks. Yeah,
that's great.
Thank you, John.
Dan, John, I'm going to need you to see, before we go to your little comment here, Do you need the screen? Because
no,
when he, okay, give me a second. I need to help Joyce call Pat. Pat's going to call in now because it looks like that was taking the line.
Yeah,
so I'll move quickly and then we can go to Steve.
Right?
I need the PowerPoint though. So done with the PowerPoint.
Where's Lee going? Lee, you got a second?
Yeah.
Can I just talk?
I got to pull up the old Juris Doctor and concentration on myself.
Yeah, that's great.
You did a file delete. So that thinks that.
I need just a couple of minutes.
I eat it every morning for breakfast.
No, you got the electronic invitation.
Yeah, it is looking better.
Because he didn't make it to the print invitation.
Oh, I got the electronic.
Would you be able to call that just directly on the phone?
The process, I think, okay, could be beneficial because I think the idea is that
if it doesn't work, you can use a cell phone to the speaker. Other meetings have been
sort of look to you to give us some guidance at what point in the path
But it's like you're close with the project now.
The construction industry should be our biggest advocates. I see lots of money to be made here.
John really was in the athletic field. He's chosen to.
The Snowbill board.
Right. Did Scott Clark bid on that? You know them from Delhi? The construction projects are being
no, well, I guess they would do the build. They don't do the design. He's over in Del Hines. He's done a lot of work. He's done a lot of places, you know, colleges and grads.
Yeah, we got this.
Could you just have her hang up and then just put me through to her? We'll just do it this way. Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Sorry, John. Apologize for the delay. Thank you for sitting through us.
So I'm going to drag everybody else to the screen. Nothing. Law school.
Joyce, should we dial her back in or wait?
I'm just doing a regular. We're just using the regular phone, and I'm getting Pat right now.
Okay, just put her on speaker.
Yeah.
From college, we have 91 and 88 here.
That's why. 73.
Get your master's first, or you get that. Hold on, I want to say 77, 78.
Do you ever practice law?
I had a Peter Groves at Hamburg.
What's that? So got the show on
Saturday. Did a side practice. Another guy that went to school with me. Couldn't charge. We got paid in ravioli and shawls.
Payment in kind.
Contracts and everything goes on.
That's a good old. I was telling someone that.
Yes, this is Joyce.
Oh, wow, 46 years.
Maybe done already.
Okay. You know what, then? If you can't, never mind. I'll just hang up.
No, are you all digital now?
On the conference call. Never mind. I'll do it the other way. All right. Thank you. Bye.
I'll never forget the iPod.
Well, you've got your, I mean, you still have your techniques there and your everything that you're working on. I haven't heard it.
Sure. Every Saturday, I've got people listening all over the world.
I didn't know that.
He had a substantial one, but I refused. And,
yeah.
And frankly, we don't have a history of that.
Better for us, bro.
Pat, can you hear me?
How are you?
Pat, all right, good. Yay. Okay, Pat is now on. Can you hear us, Pat?
Maybe optometry with us.
With down stick. Very loud.
Try it again.
Pat, can you hear us okay now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay,
great.
Thank you.
Already.
Now we need a microphone.
Okay.
We start constructing new buildings. We need to work on the
Yes, absolutely. This is Robert Valachandra. Pat, how are you?
Good. I've been like hanging with the news for
the last hour long. This, we were laughing. This happened at one time. We had the video conferencing. Remember, we were down in John's office?
Where we couldn't get the... It's like we couldn't... them,
but not
see them. Right. Yeah. Or
all right. Are we good to go then, technologically?
Good to go.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Hopefully you can hear Don Siegel, and he is up next.
Yeah, well,
I've heard him a lot before.
You have?
Yeah, she's on the advisory.
No, I was teasing. It's not going to matter here. We'll do our best. It's your floor, sir.
Thank you very much. Since this is the first time I've spoken with you, I thought it would be useful for me to start with a little brief description of my background. I'm an academic economist, and that explains why my slides are all black and white. So I don't have any fancy pictures like John does. But I grew up in Brooklyn, and I went to public high school in Brooklyn, and many of my neighbors went to school here. I chose to go to Columbia College, and Columbia has a great books curriculum, that gave me a great appreciation for liberal arts and humanities, because I took a sequence of courses on Western civilization and on the humanities. I like to say that I had two majors when I was in college. I was an economics major, but I was also majoring in tennis, because I was on the varsity team and co-captain of the tennis team in my senior year. And because I was an economics major, I graduated, and I had very little knowledge of the business world. But I had the good fortune to secure a position at an offshore hedge fund as a securities analyst, which meant in those days that I spent 2 years of my life sitting in a room reading annual reports, going through the financial data, writing them physically into spreadsheets, going to securities analyst meetings, and learning how and why companies do well, how they outperform, how to measure their performance, and trying to devise investment strategies for my boss who was managing the fund. And I became very interested in the subject of the measurement and analysis of performance. That was a subject that always intrigued me. And I became much more interested in that from an intellectual standpoint. So I decided to go back to graduate school and, you know, just went through the conventional academic route. But along the way, I became enamored of of a topic that was not just relevant from an academic standpoint, but also from a policy standpoint. And that was the commercialization of intellectual property at universities, which was really happening in those days. It was really an embryonic field. There were very few academics who were studying the commercialization of intellectual property and entrepreneurship at universities. And I started studying this topic and became interested in it. And that's what drew me into academic administration. That's why I became an academic administrator, because I started studying why some universities were doing better at managing intellectual property and commercializing intellectual property, technology transfer, and entrepreneurship. And I thought that as an academic administrator, I might be able to actually influence how universities manage intellectual property and how they use their students and their faculty to get technologies that are developed at the university commercialized. So that's why I became an academic administrator. And have a whole research program on that, but also am involved in several public policy initiatives, mainly through the National Research Council, which has several programs on the management of intellectual property at universities, the university industry partnerships, the Small Business Innovation Research Program. So I've been involved in a lot of the policy work on that. I also had the knowledge of the Capital Region because I spent 4 years as chair of the Economics Department at RPI, which is very actively involved in the commercialization of intellectual property and is doing some very creative things. Now, in June of 2008, I became dean of the School of Business. And what we tried to do initially was develop a set of goals for the school. Very explicit. And most deans won't do this. They won't say, well, you know, rankings are a goal. We made it very explicit. These are things that we need to do. When I came in, it was clear to me that state support was declining, so we had to rely on other sources of revenue. So resource acquisition was goal number one. And that meant increasing donations and gifts and increasing sponsored research grants and contracts. That was the top goal. Developing a closer connection to the business community, securing national and international rankings, promoting entrepreneurship and regional economic development, which we could see was important because Tech Valley was changing the nature of the regional economy. And then finally, promoting women and minorities in business and accounting. Now, in developing these strategic goals, we had three fundamental principles. One was faculty governance. So we reached out to the faculty. We received their buy-in for these goals. We also consulted our boards. The School of Business actually has four boards. There's the Dean's Advisory Board, which is mostly New York City investment professionals. The School of Business Advisory Council, which is mostly local business leaders, many of whom were at the event that George was talking about before at CEPQ. And then we have the accounting has its own board, accounting department. And then we have a Center for Institutional Investment Management, which has its own board. So we met with all these groups. We met with the students. We met, of course, with the faculty and the staff. And we decided that the first thing we needed to do was make sure that the goals of the School of Business were aligned with those of the university and SUNY. I love to use the example. I knew when I became an academic administrator that universities were highly political, and I love to use the example of one of my idols is Dwight David Eisenhower. Okay, and that's not a name that you normally associate with university administration. But Eisenhower was actually one of two U.S. presidents who served as president of a university. The other was Woodrow Wilson, who was president of Princeton. And the story goes that when Eisenhower was elected president in 1952, he was at the time president of Columbia University. So when he was elected, he was visited in the Oval Office by an influential alum who knew him at Columbia. And he said to the president, he said, "Mr. President, how do you like your new job as president of the country as opposed to your old job as president of Columbia?" And he said that one of the things he liked, this is Eisenhower, one of the things that he liked about his new job as president of the United States as opposed to his old job as president of Columbia was that his new job was much less political.
Thank you, Dad. I appreciate it.
So it's very important. If you want resources, this is what I said to the faculty. I said, if we want resources from the central administration, if we want resources from SUNY, then we have to pursue the goals that the university and the system want. So we did that. We also said that we would be collaborative, and I'll explain what I mean by that. In pursuing these goals, we used four very important tactics. I think first and foremost, alumni engagement. We have a vast network, thousands of alums who are very important business professionals. And what we tried to do is engage our alumni in the classroom, at research conferences. We've been running a series of research conferences that they're interested in finance, in accounting, in technology transfer and commercialization. And we have actively engaged our alums in the pursuit of those goals. And I'll describe some of the initiatives. You'll be amazed when you hear about them. We also thought it was important, and this gets back to politics, that we had to collaborate with other colleges on the campus. That had to be the critical tactic. And we've done that, and I'll mention some of those partnerships with other colleges at this university, but also partnerships with other colleges and universities in the region. And we've launched several of those initiatives. Marketing. Marketing is important because our students are doing exceptionally well in the job market. Our faculty are publishing and getting grants. We need to promote that. And then we engaged in a series of programmatic initiatives and research and community service initiatives that relate to entrepreneurship. So entrepreneurship is a critical theme of the School of Business now, and you'll see some of those programs. This is important, again, why? Because the university and SUNY Central, the power of SUNY, the 2020 initiative that George was talking about, the consistent theme is entrepreneurship, economic development, the university as the engine of economic development in the state, and we want to be a part of that. So that's why we pursued these initiatives. Now, just, again, some stylized facts about the school. We have a very highly selective undergraduate program. We just recently raised our GPA requirement to 3.25, so it's very difficult to get into the School of Business in general. We have about 1,000 students. We offer two majors. We have master's programs both in business administration and accounting. We run a variety of MBA programs. We also have an MS program in accounting with specializations that are very, very popular. Accounting is very popular now because for several reasons. One, it's viewed as a safe haven in the recession. And in fact, placement is very strong. I'll mention some of the placement numbers. Number two, New York State now has a 150-hour credit hour requirement for the CPA exam to be licensed as a CPA. So many students want to get a master's degree in accounting. And we offer very high-quality specialized programs. Let me talk about accreditation. George mentioned that before. Despite the recession, we recently were reaccredited by AACSB. This just happened in the last month. And this is very important for the school because this school was the first in the country to be accredited by AACSB at the undergraduate and graduate level in 1974. So there's that legacy. But I would argue, more importantly, we are one of only three public universities in the state of New York to have dual accreditation in business administration and accounting. And what that means is that our accounting programs are very highly scrutinized, not just by academic experts in accounting, but by practitioners. So one of the members of the accreditation team was a partner at KPMG, who evaluated the quality of our programs and gave us very high marks for that. I also love to point out that both Binghamton and Stony Brook do not have dual accreditation. They are not as strong in accounting as we are. And Rutgers just, I found out, I gave a talk at Rutgers a couple weeks ago, so I found out that they had just lost their accreditation in accounting. So this is a real feather in our cap. It helps differentiate us in the marketplace. And because accounting is such a core competency of the school, it really helps us that we were just recently reaccredited. Placement, outstanding. I have a couple of copies of an ad that Ernst & Young placed in our student newspaper congratulating the university on the 39 students that Ernst & Young hired this year alone from the university. Okay, and that's just Ernst & Young. Our numbers at the other three big four firms, PricewaterhouseCoopers, KPMG, and Deloitte & Touche, are very, very strong. We are also doing exceptionally well in investment banking. Here's a stylized fact that stuns many people. We have many alums at Goldman Sachs, and we were able to determine that the University at Albany is number three in terms of the undergraduate institution of Goldman employees. So we are placing students not just in accounting, but in investment banking. Again, 11 students were placed from undergraduate, not graduate programs, undergraduate program to Goldman Sachs in the last 3 years. Okay? And I think that's amazing. That really puts us in the same league as the elite private universities.
Dean, just on that point, are you developing? I was a banker at Bear and very proud to be an Albany alum, tried my darndest to bring as many Albany guys in, and I had to fight the establishment that if they didn't have the right pedigree, I quoted a couple people saying that to me, and I told them to stick it. Now, they were...
That's why Bear is where it is.
Wow. God. Well, you can look at J.P. Morgan, the same thing. What are we doing to infiltrate those? Because
that's actually my next slide. But we have a financial analyst honors program, which is among the best in the world. It's an elite undergraduate program. You have to have a 3.5 to get into this program. And these students they have to write a thesis. It's an honors program, so they have to write a thesis. And they are also trading. We have a student investment group. And the student investment group runs the endowment of the university and actually does better than the professional money.
Well, 150,000 of it, that's the entire
thing. Well, that's right, but
they have won our best.
By getting good results.
Yeah. I mean, this is a program that is, the students are very, heavily mentored, not just by the professors, but we have alums coming back to campus. This is part of the alumni engagement strategy. You know, we bring hedge fund managers here to, we actually brought two hedge fund managers here, one who actually runs a real hedge fund, and another who's trying to set up a student-run hedge fund. He's done it at Duke and some other schools. He wants to do it at UAlbany. These students are very well trained when they go out in the marketplace. We heard about this at the dinner. Michael Boris gave a great speech at the Alumni Association dinner. I was beaming because here's what he said. He said, the business school is doing a great job of preparing the students for the job market now, number one. And he said that we have an alumni network out there that's helping the students get placed. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why we're placing 11 at Goldman, is because we have people like Michael Boris out there opening doors for us. Mm-hmm. So that alumni network that you refer to is as strong as ever. And I had somebody ask me, why should somebody hire an Albany graduate? And I say, well, okay, I went to Columbia. But I always think of the equation. Output equals effort times ability. I mean, yeah, maybe the students at Columbia have greater ability, but our students have a work ethic that is amazing, and especially the students in that program. You know, here's a story about that. I'm an early riser. I go into the office 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning. I see the light on in the finance office, and I think to myself, wow, we have some really dedicated professors here. We're here at 6 a.m. So I go into the office. It's not the professors who are in there. It's the students who are using the Bloomberg terminal The one Bloomberg terminal that we can afford, they're in there at 6 a.m. on that Bloomberg terminal devising some kind of investment strategy or working on their thesis. So I see a work ethic here from our students, and I think that's why employers like us. I think because they know that we have that. And that's why we're doing so well in the job market. I'd also like to point out that we do very well in the local region as well in the job market. GE, ACO, CL King, CDPHP, and we're also very happy that we're placing students at Global Foundries. In fact, the HR director of Global Foundries is one of our graduates, recent MBA graduate. So we're looking that at, you know, to that as they develop more professional positions, we hope to be placing there. Again, alumni support and engagement is at its highest level. I expect that to increase because we're doing a series of events that I'll tell you about, both here and down in the city. We are taking our events down to New York City, because that's where most of our alums are. And I'll talk about that in a second. Despite the recession, we have launched a series of programmatic initiatives that I think make us more appealing, or more appealing to employers. We have our direct admit program, the financial analyst program, and honors program that I mentioned. One of the most innovative programs in the world, actually, is the financial markets regulation program, which I'd like to point out was launched before the financial crisis. It was launched in 2006. So it's a great concept, and it's another example of collaboration because it's a partnership that involves the School of Business, the College of Computing and Information, and Rockefeller College. And those students can get jobs very easily. We have FINRA coming to us now saying we need more students. You guys are doing a great job. We've also developed some initiatives that partner us with Nano. We now have a nanotechnology track in our part-time program. I'm salivating looking over there, seeing all those scientists and engineers who are coming in from Nano. They want to get an MBA in the evening? Well, come right here and take it from us. We have also incorporated sustainability into our curriculum. We have a G3. We call it G3. It's going green globally. And what that means is the students are working on consulting projects related to alternative energy for mostly local organizations under faculty supervision. We have now finally had approved undergraduate concentration in entrepreneurship. I think this is going to be very, very popular. And I felt so strongly about this that I violated one of my fundamental principles as an economist. I volunteered to teach the course in entrepreneurship. This semester, I'm teaching the course, Introduction to Entrepreneurship. And the enthusiasm that I see from these students. You know, we did a survey of our students, and we found that 50% of our students are thinking about starting their own companies. And until we had this undergraduate concentration, we had no way to try to channel that into a real startup company. And we're going to be trying to do that at the undergraduate level and the graduate level. So I'm really just excited about this undergraduate concentration in entrepreneurship. I hope it leads to an entrepreneurship minor across the campus, because I think that there are students in other colleges that have that entrepreneurial spirit, and we need to tap into that. We also have a very innovative track in our master's program in forensic accounting, which has become very popular, again, because of all the financial investigations and all that. Now, before I said that we had some goals. Well, we like to think, and the accreditation teams agreed with us, that we've accomplished those goals over the last 3 years. We were recently ranked 4 times by Princeton Review. We like Princeton Review now. We were ranked 4 times by Princeton Review in the top 15 nationally, including being ranked number 2 in the country for providing the greatest opportunities for women. And I would argue that we're really number 1 because they put Simmons College first. That's all women. So that's not really fair. But so we have national rankings. And I'd like to point out that none of the other SUNY Research Center schools, Binghamton, Buffalo, Stony Brook, we're ranked in the top 15 along any of the nine categories over the last 3 years. So we're outperforming.
We're not competitive here at all.
Well,
we are.
You know, we have the best business school in the SUNY system. And I say that because I do not believe that the students are our customers. I believe that the employers are our customers.
Does our market research among students, now not employers, does our market research, or have we done market research to indicate to us that that is indeed perceived? I mean, I'm not denying that it's real.
I would have to say I don't think it is perceived. I think we need to do a better job of getting that.
Yeah, I would have to say that too. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, but I know where I live. It's probably not perceived.
We need to do a better job of getting, you know, this Ernst & Young message out. Mm-hmm. And this is why I'm going to talk about one of the things we did this semester, which I think is very important. To get that message out. I'm going to talk about that in a minute.
Might want to have a student do that as a student project, the market research. Seriously, yeah. Because yeah. I mean, the research would help, because you talked about marketing. I mean, I never took a marketing course, but I've taught a couple. I mean, you always do talk about doing market research so that your marketing is focused.
Well, you know, you're
right. A pilot on TV.
Couldn't that sit the Holiday Inn, right?
We've also, in terms of accomplishing the goals, we've also been very successful in raising money through donations and gifts. But what I'm actually prouder of, because a lot of business schools can do that, and we have very successful alums, but one thing that we do that's very different, and here is where I know we're better, not only than all the SUNY schools, but almost all the business schools in the country, and that is raising money through sponsored research, grants, and contracts. So that's been a major strategic change, is getting the faculty to also think about securing grants. And the accreditation team pointed this out. They said, wow, you guys, I can't believe the volume of grants for a business school is unprecedented. So that's unusual, and that differentiates us. We've also done a lot more research conferences. I'll talk about some of them. We've also stepped up on community engagement. We do a lot more field projects, which are year-long consulting projects for local organizations. We have incubator evaluation project going on. And last week, we launched the inaugural New York State Business Plan Competition. We had started this last year as a regional event. Now it's New York State. So we had all the major research universities competing. Columbia, Cornell, Syracuse, Rochester, Binghamton, they were all there. And, of course, the reason why I'm mentioning it is because we won the clean tech sustainability track. Now here's an interesting anecdote about that. The founder of that company is an MBA student of ours who works at Nano, but is taking courses and will graduate this next week. From the School of Business, they started a fuel cell company, and they are working with students at RPI. This is exactly what we wanted to do, what we wanted to accomplish when we launched this business plan competition. We wanted students from different campuses within the region to work together on ventures. And that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing that cross-fertilization to take advantage of the quality of the human capital in this region, the student quality. So I was very proud that they won. We also had a team that came in third in that competition, but competed at Wharton in the Walmart Innovation Challenge. Walmart has a national sustainability competition. They won the regional competition. That is, they beat Wharton, they beat Georgetown, they beat Maryland, and they beat the University of Virginia to go on to the Nationals, where they lost to MIT and Stanford. But they did a great job just making it to the national championship. So we have tremendous entrepreneurial talent here at the graduate level and the undergraduate level. I'll skip that. We also have... I'll talk about this. Been actively in the context of improving conditions for women and minorities in business. This year, we launched two new student groups. The first is called Women Excelling in Business, because we want to, you know, continue to draw on that strength that we have in promoting women in business. And we also launched the Association for Latino Professionals in Finance and Accounting. So we're moving ahead along that direction. And then we have a variety of entrepreneurial initiatives, some of which I mentioned. I do want to talk about a couple of these. The most important one is what I will call the Social Entrepreneurship Program, Social Entrepreneurship Project. And I'll talk about that because it's a partnership with our Small Business Development Center, but more importantly, with our School of Social Welfare. So this is a very unique program which provides loans to entrepreneurs who would not qualify for loans based on conventional financial criteria. So typically when you apply for a loan, they look at your credit score and they look at your collateral. What we have devised is a new program that looks not just at those financial factors, but character. So these are character loans, quote unquote. There's some character aspect to it. And we are providing the entrepreneurs with training and mentoring. Our students, our faculty, and staff in the Small Business Development Center will be helping these mostly minority and women entrepreneurs launch their new businesses and help them grow. We're doing this with, we just got a grant from the Empire State Development, because what we are saying is that most economic development strategies are targeted to technology-based businesses. And clearly, and thanks again to the University at Albany, this region and state is, you know, the technology-based economic development is there. But there's also the bottom of the pyramid, what C.K. Prahalad calls the bottom of the pyramid. What do we do about the small service establishments that are being started? So this program is targeted to that, the bottom of the pyramid. And we're working with CEFQ on this, because CEFQ is providing the money to lend to these entrepreneurs. So it's a unique program. And what makes it unique is that it's actually a research project. Okay, and we're doing that because we want to leverage this. We want to get major grants from foundations and federal agencies, like, the you know, for example, NSF or the Small Business Administration. And so we have evaluation built into the design of the program. It's a highly innovative program, and we think it's going to be a model for the rest of SUNY and potentially nationally.
Are they recourse loans or not? Are they recourse or non-recourse?
They recourse, yeah. But the idea behind this is we're going to be setting up a social network, basically, of these entrepreneurs and the people who are helping them. And we think that, you know, we want to prove, nobody has ever really demonstrated that character loans can work, you know, in terms of research. So we think that a lot of people will be looking at this program and saying, does it work? And if it works, we'll match it. So it's going to attract a lot of attention because of that. And again, so it's character-based. There will be students involved. We also will develop a social entrepreneurship minor. So we think of this as having an educational value for the students as well, and linking the two schools and having a minor, let's say, that in social entrepreneurship, which would link students in both schools who have an interest in promoting these social enterprises.
Okay? Yeah, you mentioned the recourse. It's recourse, but frankly, really not recourse. The character-based loan is an uncollateralized environment that part of the character is the recourse aspect.
Right. That's
part of the formula for the character loan. Is that right, John?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we'll be announcing that. We haven't actually announced that officially yet. We're going to do a press conference on it because it's such an innovative program, and we really want to try to scale it up as quickly as we can. And I'm confident that we can do that. The other program that I'm very excited about, in fact, it's on the cover of our alumni magazine, is a program called Young Entrepreneurs Academy. And this is a very good example of community engagement. And it is designed, we bring middle and high school students to campus to learn how to start real companies. So these are, and this is not a junior achievement kind of program. These are real companies and with real investors, real business plans, and the idea is that the students, and I love the motto, is you start as a student and you finish as a CEO. And the students love it because they're learning a lot about business and entrepreneurship. But they're also, I mean, could you imagine going on a college interview and talking about your own company? That's got to impress the interviewer. So this is a very, very good program. We have already secured a sponsor for the program who's very excited about it, Michael Hoffman of Turf Hotels. And we have used our advisory board, several members of our advisory board are investing in these student-run companies. So we're going to be building up that program, and we're very excited to have it. The only other university that has a chapter is the University of Rochester. This was a program that was started at the University of Rochester with support from the Kauffman Foundation. And this is another part of our strategy, because we want to go to Kauffman and ask, we take this program, which they support, and we've done a very good job of helping them and promoting them, the social entrepreneurship project that we've developed, and also the educational initiatives that we've started in entrepreneurship, and go to Kauffman and say, Kauffman, look, you know, you've given money to Rochester, you've given money to Syracuse, you've given money to NYU, why not give a multi-million-dollar grant to Albany? We really need it, and the return on investment would be high. So that's part of the strategy behind that. Now, I mentioned alumni engagement, and I'd like to think that this is such a critical tactic for us, and it's critical, and we have a lot of alumni to draw on. We've had a series of events that have been actively supported by our alumni. The first was the YEA investor panel, which took place in the atrium here. So this was like a business plan competition for the middle and high school students. We did an event. We had the investors there. And then on April 21st, and this gets back to your point about advertising the success of the school in placement, for the first time in the history of the school, again, this was because of alums like Pat, who told us that we should be doing this, we held a reception for direct admits. The high school students, we held a special reception for them. It was a beautiful reception at Deloitte headquarters in New York City, impressed the parents and students immensely, and we will be doing this on an ongoing basis. And the message that we have there is, your kids can get a job at Deloitte or at KPMG. We also had, you know, alums come from other firms. And these are the kind of connections that we have. And it really impressed them. And they go back and they tell their high school friends about it. We did the business plan competition, which was funded generously by CEFQ, and the president of that company is a double alum of the School of Business, and other alums supported that competition as well. Just last week, we had two events which are targeted to minority students in accounting, which have been actively supported by Ernst & Young. Ernst & Young has given us a money to promote minorities in accounting, not just at the college level. We also have a high school program that we run over the summer. They've supported that as well. And we expect that to continue. That is a very good example that George was talking about of a university-industry partnership. Because here's a good example of how they helped us as a customer. They came to us and they said, you need to improve your communication skills, the students' communication skills. So we said to them, okay, fine, can you give us some money to hire an instructor for that particular course? Can you bring someone from industry who can help the students do better when they reach the job market in terms of their communication skills? They stepped up, they gave us some money to support that initiative. So I think that we can work with our industry partners to make education better for the students and make them more successful in the marketplace. We have some upcoming events. I mentioned the Social Entrepreneurship Initiative. We now have a nice acronym for it, which we're going to try to use. Because the way we were able to get the state money was to say that this was a way of promoting economic development. That you guys really, you've invested a lot in technology, but you also have to think about the bottom of the pyramid, and we have a great program to help increase the probability of success. Now, we also want to make use, and I visited this facility, of the wonderful SUNY Global Center in Midtown Manhattan. Most of our alums are in Manhattan, but we're going to be doing a series of events at the SUNY Global Center starting in 2 weeks. We have and this is a research conference for a major journal in the field of finance, but at lunchtime we will have a practitioner panel featuring alumni of the School of Business who are in alternative investments, in hedge funds, in private equity, in real estate, in other alternative investments. And we're going to be drawing on our alums, and we expect alums to be very actively involved in that event. On June 8th, we're the second university partner of an organization called Corporate Directors Group, which provides professional training for individuals who serve on the boards of publicly traded firms. Now, we know that we have a lot of alums who serve on publicly traded boards of publicly traded firms who live in the city. It's free for any alum. So this is a free event. Both events are free. But we think these are events that would be of interest to our alums. And we want to make use of that center. It's a beautiful facility for a conference. We're going to have a groundbreaking ceremony for the new School of Business building. In September, for the first time in the history of the school, we're going to be hosting another event that I believe will be very attractive to our alums. This one will be on campus, which is the 4th New York Accounting and Finance Forum. This is also a research and practitioner-oriented event. We stole it away from Binghamton. We stole it away from them. And so I'm very happy to be hosting that. And Deloitte has already stepped up to support that event. Now, John talked about, most of what I focused on, and remember, 2008 recession, right? The recession has been a godsend for the School of Business. We've accomplished a lot during that period. And so all the things that I've talked about so far, I have not mentioned the building, I have not mentioned physical capital, I've only talked about human capital. So I think it's great that we have the new building, but it's important that we have made that progress, that we have better programs, we have stronger connections already to the business community, we have more research, we have more funded research. So now we're ready to occupy, hopefully, in 2 years, the new School of Business building, which John talked about before. I think this is going to be a great way to engage our alumni. We're going to have a facility where we can run events, receptions. It's going to be a great building. The classrooms are going to be state-of-the-art, latest technology. It's going to help us do a lot more for the students. And again, if we are doing well now in terms of placement, we're going to do even better, because this is going to be a more attractive place for employers to come. So I think the future is just incredibly bright. We want to have two entrepreneurship centers in the new building, one that would be focused on the technology side, and we're partnering with Nano and with the RNA Institute to try to get some of those technologies commercialized. We have some grant proposals in with RNA Institute to try to get some of the life sciences technologies commercialized. And then we'll have a social entrepreneurship center. I'm expecting that to evolve out of the project that I mentioned before. We also have a faculty member who's one of the world's leading experts on cybersecurity. He already has a center. He's been securing a substantial amount of funding. So he's going to bring his cybersecurity center in there. We have our existing Center for Institutional Investment Management. And this is just going to be a great facility for us and help us do a lot more for everyone, all of our stakeholders. That's really all I have to say, but I just want to say that, you know, we are forging ahead and doing as well as we've ever done, and that was confirmed by the accreditation teams. They basically had pretty much nothing negative to say about it, and they just said it's amazing what you've accomplished with the dwindling state support.
John does a terrific job. I wish he had a little more enthusiasm. But, John does a great job, and I think he's really restored the School of Business to its former prominence and gone beyond that. So thank you for everything you've done.
Don.
Thank you.
You've made presentations into an aerobic art. I think you can certainly instill that. You know, I can't imagine anybody working with you not having communication as a core tenet in what they can do and deliver. So that was a great overview.
You know, I think second what George said, because it hasn't been that many years before Don came that the School of Business was facing loss of its accreditation. And he has revived, invigorated school, and it's amazing, and that's why, quite frankly, the alumni have been so supportive, because they see, you know, they see that it's a success story now, and it's really working. So, you know, a big pat on the back.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I have one question. Yeah. Is there any plan for a student incubator?
Oh, that's my dream, to have that. Now, I'm
if you're going to teach them to be entrepreneurs, yes, having that can start businesses right here.
Oh, that's really what I want. And, you know, in theory, though, my understanding of the is that we can't do that.
You can't.
On Washington Avenue. And I think that's a shame, because I know of at least four or five student companies that, you know, I think they go to Harriman to start their companies, where they go off campus, and I think that's a shame. I think if we had an incubator, the plans are, if we have the freedom to do so, to have incubation space, some incubation space in the new building, and that's what we need, because I can tell you that the demand is there. It is there, because we had undergraduates submit business plans for the competition, and I know that our graduate students are starting companies because they're winning business plan. You know, they're winning the. They have real companies that have won the competition. So it's a shame that they can't do it here. And I think we need that freedom.
It's also another anomaly of New York State,
yeah,
which is sad.
Thank you very much.
We need to back up to...
Is Steve going to go, and then we're going to go to the resolution?
Yeah, Steve will brief things, then right to the resolution.
Okay.
So you're going to do that little...
Sure.
We're going back to...
student housing.
Following Giarusa's presentation, Steve got a brief comment.
As you know, Stony Brook this past fall in trying to deal with its budget cut, proposed cutting the Southampton campus, and started down that road, and then got stopped in its tracks when it was determined that they'd kind of committed a technical flaw and hadn't actually done anything formally with Stony Brook's council to get permission to do that. The Board of Trustees wrote, passed a resolution in January of this year bringing clarification, and basically state explicitly that student housing developments need to have explicit council approval. So we put together a resolution, given the fact that there's a huge hole in the ground out there and lots of pilings dug, I would appreciate an affirmative vote on the resolution. But in order to cross our T's, dot our I's, and make sure that we can't get challenged, there's an executive summary in your packets that I think was distributed 2.5 years ago or so as we're at the head of this. But we just weren't thinking in terms of formal resolutions, because it wasn't an issue until the Stony Brook problem. So in order to play a little bit of catch-up, there's a resolution that would provide your approval to go forward with Liberty Terrace housing development.
Right. And just on that point, I mean, I think the previous briefings, you know, constituted probably a review, and we have that update today clearly. So I think there's been a continuum there in educating and keeping the council abreast of the developments. I think this resolution seeks to ratify our recommendation and approval of that, and you know, would seek a motion to move this resolution.
I move.
Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now Jim Russo doesn't have to kill himself.
He still has to kill himself. Okay, I think ACT, Pierre, on the agenda.
Oh, very quickly. The ACT continues to hold the periodic board of directors meetings, which Michael joins us on. Big thing out is a survey on the annual conference that's coming up, and if it's going to be a one-day, two-day, whatever, but that should be out for those that have participated in the annual conferences in the past. Another thing is that we're still working on the scholarship, which we will inform all of the campuses on the two scholarships per region that ACT offers to students, and we're going to kick it up to $1,000. So Albany applied last year, and we would expect a similar application for those, and we'll have that information out relatively soon. And I think there were only two college councils that did not adopt a resolution in favor of the rational tuition program, and the association stands ready to assist SUNY or the campuses in any proactive advocacy work.
Great. I would just say that as someone on those calls, Pierre's doing a great job pulling that group together. It's nice to see them actually doing something. Seriously, I mean, because it's been really sort of a little hollow for the last couple of years.
Pierre, that will do anything to get out of the house. So.
Yeah, except that we do it all by phone. So he has to stay in the house.
I think you know, closing with Fardeen and University Development is appropriate. I know there's been some major achievements. And,
but
you know,
I
Fardeen.
Want to start by asking for a moment of silence. A family member died suddenly, tragically, in Pakistan earlier this week. So I wish you would. I'm just kidding.
I told you it was a lousy joke when you told me it the first time.
He's such an idiot.
Wow, you should have turned right.
If George didn't say something, we would have.
I hope the tape is there.
Sorrel, that's an edit for the official tape.
That's awesome. No, leave that in what I said.
Such an idiot.
Who was the family member?
It's a joke. He's not. Sorrel's taking notes.
He's putting it in the minutes.
He's like, who's a family member?
Sorrel, when you edit the tape,
you don't have to spell
that. Could be edited.
SEAL team 6 coming for Fardeen.
I thought, you know, if you'd gone here 2.5 hours, so I lost that.
That's fair enough. I feel your pain.
Just a few things. Last time I talked about the Albany Unite. That's an initiative we started with our students, and 14 student groups have participated in it. And we had over 550 gifts from our students, and they raised over $15,000. And we are going to match those gifts by another $18,000 through the foundation. And all the gifts are going to go to these 14 student groups. And this is our effort of promoting philanthropy on campus. I still don't know. They haven't even told me who the winner is, because four of these groups are going to get more funding than the others. And that's based on the number of hits they had on their on their videos. So that has been a very, very successful campaign for us. And also, one thing you've noticed on most of our publications now from the foundation, something is called QR codes. I didn't even know what that was. That is, you can put your smartphone and go directly to our website. And we started that with our student Albany Unite campaign, because so many students were giving. The flip part of that is now you have to have a mobile-friendly website for giving. And we started a couple of pilot websites on this. It could be a fad, because right now everybody's doing and wants to see what it looks like. But it's been very successful, and we've seen a lot of traffic coming through through the QR code. As far as fundraisings, we had a number of six-figure gifts since last time we met. I just want to mention a couple of them. For the athletics program, Steve and Bruce Day, they both played for Coach Ford. They made a pledge of $100,000. The Compass Group gave us $150,000 for student scholarship. And this is not a six-figure gift, but I think it's very important to mention. We secured our first major gift for Rockefeller Institute. And this is from Ambassador Blinken. That's a $75,000 gift. Mm-hmm. We are working with Ambassador Blinken for an endowed program there, but this was the first gift he gave towards the Rockefeller Institute. And finally, we closed on a planned gift of seven figures. This is for scholarships, research, and athletics program. And I leave to Saul if he wants to give any more detail on that gift. No, not at the moment. But I want to recognize Saul for his good work, and he's been working on that gift since 1969.
Wow.
Saul, better known as the Pied Piper of Blue Hairs.
Now,
we're
getting interest in on May 15th, there's a groundbreaking. We're going to have a lecture here at 6 o'clock by Jack Stozak. At 5 o'clock, Jack Stozak, he's a Nobel laureate, and his talk is going to be on unlocking the origins of evolution, the design and synthesis of artificial and biological cell. And that's going to be on June 15th. And Don Siegel had a mistake in his presentation. Not all your panelists on May 20th are going to be School of Business. One of them is a history major.
Oh, stop.
Excellent.
George Phelps.
Oh. Well,
that's strike two, Bernie.
That's my report if you have any questions.
Thank you.
While he's behind.
Okay. Well, I think that's a very full and thoughtful meeting. Anybody have any other business they want to bring before the council?
Graduation. I just wanted to know. I'm going to be there. I just didn't know.
You got to tell this guy. I just got an email today.
Fardy, take another minute and just talk about
John's not gonna be.
Your success relative to the fundraising activities that you've had overall. The percentages.
The percentages of
this guy.
The performance of the portfolio, the performance of your fundraising activities.
So as may I have mentioned it last year, the University of Albany Foundation, which is us, University at Albany, we had the best performance among all the campuses in the capital region. That includes RPI, Skidmore's, and such. Our endowment went up 19.5%, 13.5% of that was investment return, and the rest was just the amount of cash that we brought through fundraising. We are past $30 million in endowment, and actually to date, as of April 30th, we were up 20% in our performances for our portfolio.
Fiscal year is July 1 through June 30th.
Yes. Yeah.
Relative to others, we're in the top decile as opposed to the bottom. It's where we started.
Very nice.
There's an inverse correlation between his humor and his profession.
His humor sucks, but his work is good.
Can I adjourn?
Get a motion to adjourn. Can I have a second? All in favor?
Aye. Excellent meeting.
Damn, I got a clap.
We're not going to repeat.